through life.
And welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, also with patriotism and the media, even with the military and economic schemes that pervade our societies. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards your allegiance towards many of these things. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching. With his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with him. Today we will conclude our presentation of matzah in that today is the last day of celebrating matzah this year. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in our discussion is 877-300-7645. There is news today that Hamas, which is the movement of Muslims living primarily in Gaza, that they have reelected Khalid Mishal as their political leader. This is according to several sources inside Hamas. Of course, this election isn't an open election where the people got to vote and express their choice for leader. This is a gathering of Hamas terrorists and the terrorists meeting among themselves and deciding who is the best terrorist to lead the terrorist organization. But what this does mean, since Mishal is a terrorist completely and totally committed to the destruction of Israel, he is completely opposed for any reconciliation talks with Yisrael. He is completely opposed to Israel's existence and is a stalwart towards the armed struggle against Israel. The realization that what the President of the United States asked for while he was in the Middle East, saying that the only hope for Israel is peace. Forget it. It's impossible. The last free election amongst the Muslims living in Israel showed a 65% favoritism towards Hamas. You cannot reason with religious zealots who are wholeheartedly committed to your destruction and annihilation. Never going to happen. There is nothing you can give them that will satiate their rage. It cannot happen. If you want peace, then you have to expose and condemn the religion that is opposed to it, Islam. The United Nations finally said enough. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon has said that the crisis that is brewing over the rhetoric between the United States and North Korea has gone too far. And he has announced plans to restart negotiations and discussions. The idiot that is taking over for his daddy in North Korea, now referring to himself as the great leader and the as a god figure, is trying to do what a lot of dictators do when conditions in their country are deplorable. North Korea is a communist country. Depict conditions, life in a communist country is miserable, just as life in a fascist country is miserable. Life in an Islamic country is miserable. And so what these kinds of dictators do is they say to their people, well, life is miserable here because of those guys over there. They're the ones responsible for making your life miserable. And there are all sorts of international sanctions on North Korea. And to a degree, he can paint a credible story based upon that. And so rather than the people of North Korea looking to him and say, well, life is miserable because of communism and because of you, they are beguiled into believing that they must sacrifice because there is a greater foe that wants to destroy them. This is very much like America's war against terrorism. It's a myth. Terrorism is a tactic. You can't fight a war against a tactic. We've spent $6 trillion and sacrificed over 1 million lives in a mythical crusade, all to get people to focus on everything other than what's wrong in their country and what's wrong with their leaders. So the United States, the Obama administration, by playing along and responding tit for tat with North Korea, has spiraled something out of control that if he had just let the idiot alone, would have been nothing. But we've decided that we're going to fly stealth bombers over North Korea, and we're flying all sorts of other aircrafts. We're positioning our Navy against the shores of North Korea. That is exactly what he was looking for. And the United States played into his hands. Finally, the UN chief said enough. Russia has been saying enough for the last 3 weeks. So has China. Telling the United States, just back off and nothing's going to happen. But we don't seem to understand those concepts. And, you know, it's if you have a dog and that dog is doing behavior that you don't like, the tendency of most dog owners is you yell at the dog, swat the dog, respond to the dog. But if you do that, all you're doing is reinforcing the behavior, because what the dog wants is attention. If you simply turn away, pay no attention whatsoever to the dog when it jumps up or jumps on furniture or does something that you do not like, and you ignore the dog, it will stop doing it. Because it's only doing it to gain attention. To a large degree, the same thing is true with infants. If a lot of times infants will cry for no reason other than they want attention. And if they are rewarded with attention every time they cry, what you're doing is reinforcing their constant crying, which means you can't take them out, and your life and their life while you're growing up is ruined by constant crying. You have to learn to know the difference between this child needs my attention, and it's time for me to give this child attention, and this child is just using an irritant to gain attention. That's something the United States needs to learn as it relates to North Korea. There was an announcement yesterday that the H7N9 avian flu virus, a new one that is not like any that has come before, has been passed from human to human. It originally arose, it's an avian flu, from wild birds. Then it was transferred to domesticated poultry, and then from poultry to those who were caring for the turkey primarily, and chickens, and now to humans. It is deadly. Those who have contracted the disease have died. But there's two aspects of a pandemic. One is the mortality rates. This one is highly deadly. The other is how easily it passes from human to human. In this particular case, it is not passing readily from human to human. But there will be another. And there will ultimately be a avian flu. And things perhaps even worse that will be devastating, and they're going to occur over the next 20 years. So just keep your eyes open, your ears listening, because when this happens, the spread will be fast that you're going to want to be prepared in advance. So there's things that you can do to minimize your contact with these kind of pathogens. Various levels of breathing masks can be helpful. Gloves can be helpful. Apparel which you take off and leave in and then can spray and decontaminate is helpful. Constantly washing your hands is helpful. Not entering large crowds of people. All those kinds of things is helpful. And therefore, you know, having supplies that enable you to get by without having to stand in a grocery store line and fondle things that have been touched by six people are helpful. So there's many things you can do, including just keeping yourself in a condition of good health. But this is going to happen. It's going to be worse. It's not this particular one, but there will be another. There was news out of Europe today. The the Eurozone is continually depressed. Now unemployment has reached an all-time record high of 12%. Now, the 12% is particularly alarming because the Eurozone counts unemployment the same way the United States does. That means the 12% of Europeans are actively looking for jobs and have no work whatsoever. Those who have lost a job that they were qualified to do and are doing part-time or menial labor are not counted in the unemployed. Those who have stopped looking for jobs and are now dependent upon government handouts are not counted in that number. So it's not really an unemployment number. It's a number that reflects those who are actively looking for jobs that do not have one. But it's 12%. Typically, when you look at the overall unemployed and you take out those who are already retired, and you take out those who are in school and not yet working age, and you just look at what percentage of the resulting population is unemployed, you would double the number that, in this case, 12%, which is the number of people out of work that are actively looking for work, to get the total number of those who should be employed, could be employed, but are not employed, which would have unemployment in Europe at about 1 in 4 people. That is not sustainable. Societies won't crumble on that kind of condition. The number of people unemployed in the 17 member states rose by another 33,000 during the month of March. It hit a total of 19 million people throughout the Eurozone that are out of work and are looking for work. The highest rate, of course, was in Greece, which was 26%, which means about half of Greece's eligible workforce is not working. The most recent figure for Greece, however, was in December, so the Census Bureau isn't working either in Greece. The jobless figure for Spain's unemployment hit 26% as well, so Spain and Greece are about the same level, and Portugal is at 18%. Now, one of the issues with all of this is that politicians, to continue to be empowered, will almost always look at those kinds of numbers, and they will try to spend their way into economic prosperity. And when you do that, all you do is raise your debt, and you make certain that your demise is for certain, and that it will be even more catastrophic.
Smoker.
Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yadav. The reason I wanted to share this story of very high unemployment rates in Europe, and the rates are extraordinarily high in the United States as well, just below 10%, which means that overall unemployment in the United States, if you count those who are eligible, able to work, but are no longer seeking work, and those who are underemployed, either doing part-time jobs or are doing jobs well below their capability, that number is double that, so about 20%, 1 in 5. The reason this becomes a real problem is that governments typically, as does the United States government, tries to resolve the problem through government. And so what they do is a combination of two things, both of which are counterproductive. One is they spend more money, because there's this notion that a government job puts people to work, when in fact a government job is counterproductive to the system, because a government job requires the government to take money from businesses and from individuals to just redistribute it. Always a bad idea. The reality is that the second thing that is such a problem with this is that government also tries to solve these problems by putting restrictions on business in terms of who they can fire, how they terminate, what the costs of termination are, what the costs of ongoing support for the fired worker is, and then they also have a tendency to side with labor unions, which make the resulting employees less productive and more costly. The combination of that and the fact that governments must deficit spend and therefore borrow money to create their incentives for the economy means that you're taking capital away from businesses and making it more expensive and more difficult for them to borrow. And the moment you continue to make handicap business, then unemployment, the only employment that really matters in the country, dries up. And so this is really a death spiral. It's why I say once you start down this spiral of large deficits, government control of business, government dependency programs, there's really no way out. It is not a solvable solution. And you might say, well, you know, we've had recessions and depressions in the past. We've always found a way out. Well, the world's experiment with fiat money, which is this money that is, rather than being an asset and based upon an asset like gold, is instead based on a liability. Your money is a promissory note. It is a liability. It's not an asset. And this experiment with fiat money, money which is based upon debt as opposed to a tangible real asset, is only about 40 years old. And so there has not been an occurrence where countries have resolved the ongoing moral collapse that's associated with fiat money, the lack of controls, the amount of self-indulgence that comes with fiat money, the inability to recognize the value of it. And therefore, we are putting ourselves in a position where the only tactic that is being used is to print more of it. And the more money you put into the system, the less value the existing currency has. It's not resolvable. I don't care how you look at the math. You can't solve this problem. That's why Europe and the United States have between a 10 and 15 year fuse. That's the length of time remaining before Europe and the United States collapse economically. One of the reasons, of course, that the United States is so in debt is that Afghan and Iraqi invasions went terribly wrong. Not only did the country spend what now is estimated at $6 trillion squandered, making bad situations worse, making America more vulnerable. The situation in Afghanistan has got the very Afghans that we are putting in pretty new uniforms, that we are arming with brand new weapons, using those weapons to kill Americans. This news came out yesterday. An Afghan teenager killed an American soldier in eastern Afghanistan by stabbing him in the back while he played with a group of local children. About the only contact American soldiers have with Afghanis is with children, because the American serviceman has grown to despise Afghani adults. Despises the men because of the way they treat women. Despises the women because of the way they allow men to beat them and to harass them, to oppress them. They are disgusted with the men because of the concept of bachiba, which is so prevalent in that culture, where when Afghan men are in charge of a community, they are both pedophiles and engage in homosexual sex with young boys. They do not like the way they treat animals. It's just a savage society. And so the only group that Americans seem to have any contact with is children. And here, a child killed an American with a knife as he was playing with Afghan children. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We were discussing an issue in Afghanistan. It has just been a cesspool that, very much like Vietnam, in the sense that we invaded a country and then left it worse than we found it. That will be the case with Afghanistan. That the very thing we were trying to prevent in Vietnam occurred immediately upon our withdrawal. Same thing will occur in Afghanistan, which means that everybody died for nothing. And in Vietnam. Same thing will be true in Afghanistan. The moment the United States leaves, the Taliban will be back in control. And so it was, we accomplished nothing except squandering lives and money. In both cases, we propped up a puppet government that turned out to be so corrupt that there was no support for it. Case in Vietnam was overwhelmingly so, which is why it toppled. And the case in Afghanistan, most international reviewers of such things call the Afghani government the single most corrupt in the world. Billions of dollars are being stolen by Karzai and pals. You, in a war like this, where all they have to do is point up to the sky and it's your planes and it's your bombs and it's your bullets that are killing people. Even if the number of people killed by Americans now is very low because we mostly spend time in ceremonial kinds of things inside of highly protected barricades, which was, by the way, the case here. The reality is that every Afghani you kill, you simply make more terrorists. And there is no way to tell the good guys from the bad guys. They look identical. There's nobody wearing uniforms here. There is literally no way to tell who's a civilian and who's a militant. And so it was a war that was doomed for failure at the beginning. And much of that is because of Islam. You know, in Islam, there will never be a democratic Islam because Islam means submission. They'll use a facade of it, but once the facade has yielded their desired result, you'll be like Egypt where, yeah, there'll be another vote as soon as we can get around to it. Oh, yeah, don't worry about that Constitution. Don't worry about that Supreme Court. We'll take care of that, too. And that's really what happens in these countries. It was an impossibility to establish democracy in an Islamic country. It was impossible to establish human rights in an Islamic country. And so what we did was foolish. Moreover, all we did was take the most fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan. We chased them out temporarily, and they went into Pakistan where they destabilized that country, which has nuclear weapons. Absurd. It was like the invasion of Iraq. You go into Iraq, which was run by a secular dictator who was actually on our side because he was opposed to Iran, fighting Iran, and you replace him with a government that's controlled entirely by Iranian mullahs, allowing Iran to finish its nuclear program and to control much of the Middle East. It's counterproductive uses of the military have become ubiquitous with government malpractice. The reality, too, in Afghanistan is that in this long withdrawal, and there's no reason we should be there at all, that the killing comes as the monthly death toll rose to 14 in this particular month, almost all of them killed by the very people that we were arming and supporting. This young person that stabbed the American in the back as he was playing with children was just 16 years old. This is a story that that has foreshadows of what's going to occur in the West. This will occur in the United States. It will occur in Europe. In fact, it did occur in Europe because Cyprus is part of the Eurozone. This is how a fascist society works. It is why fascism, not communism, will be the choice of the New World Order. This came across the news wires yesterday. A company owned by the in-laws of Cypriot President Nikos Anastasiades withdrew dozens of millions from the Laki, which is the popular bank, on March 12th and 13th, according to an article published in the Cypriot newspaper. The newspaper, which is affiliated to the communist-rooted AKEL party, reports that 3 days before the Eurogroup meeting, the company took 5 promissory notes worth 21 million euros, about $25 million, from the Laiki Popular Bank and transferred the money to London. Responding to allegations, the Cypriot president said, "The attempts to defame companies or people linked to my family is nothing more than an attempt to distract people from the liability of those who led the country to a state of bankruptcy." Well, pal, you are president. So who is leading the country to bankruptcy if not you? And since the evidence exists that this occurred, why are you denying it? In fact, if you listen to his comment, he actually wasn't denying it. He just said that that this defames him and his family. But it's the reality. The president added that no one, including him, will be exempt from ongoing investigations into the responsibilities over the near collapse of the economy. He just didn't say he was going to be subject to an investigation on the transfer of $25 million U.S. dollars, did he? He said that when the investigative committee convenes, that he will request that his members look into all cases of economic destruction in the country. Last Friday, a list of companies and politicians that had loans written off by banks at the heart of the Cypriot bailout crisis was published in Greece and was subsequently handed to the Cypriot Parliament's Ethics Committee. The list includes the names of politicians from Cyprus's biggest political parties, including the EDEK and the Greens. Now, it's one thing to have your savings wiped out by a decree of the European community, and that's uncalled for and harsh. It's another thing altogether to have your loans forgiven. Remember I said that that I expected as we move towards the New World Order, and I think that Cyprus is just a marvelous mirror on what's going to occur. Economic collapse because the Cypriots continued to do two things. One is they were way too into war because there's a there's infighting between Muslims and Christians and who's going to control Cyprus. So they're way into a smoldering religious war. Second, high unemployment as a result of high unemployment, they continue to deficit spend. And they deficit spent their way to the point where their deficit exceeded their annual GDP, which is the case, by the way, in the United States. And so they were no longer, they reached a point where they were no longer able to service their debt, which means they were no longer able to get nations and individuals to provide the debt that they needed to support their existing debt and to continue to deficit finance. And so they reached a point where no one was willing to loan the money. The United States is probably between 5 and 10 years of reaching that point. And then they were put in a position where they were 100% beholden to the euro and to Central European bankers, which means they lost their sovereignty. The European bankers could impose whatever they wished. And so they had this island country that they knew that they could impose what they want to do throughout Europe and throughout America. It's one thing to siphon off a large percentage of other people's money and to confiscate it and to devalue their money, which is the standard operating procedure currently in the United States and Europe, is another thing entirely to steal their savings. But that's what they're going to do in the future. And so they orchestrate it such that they only steal the savings of those who have substantial savings, which means the majority of people who have not saved aren't affected, and so they get by with doing it. And the same thing will be true in the United States. We'll reach a point where savings will be confiscated by those people who have amassed significant wealth, and it will be confiscated. And since the majority of people don't care that money is being stolen from others, and the wealthiest aren't going to go and take up arms against their government, they can get by with it, and they know they can get by with it, and they just got by with it in Cyprus. This was the test balloon, the trial balloon. But what happens is that those people who did have savings no longer have savings to invest, and they're no longer going to work. You've angered them and disenfranchised them to the point that Atlas will shrug. Guaranteed. There will be no ongoing business development in Cyprus. None. No business is going to risk having their bank accounts raided. So you can only do this once. But they will do it in Europe. They have done it now in Europe, and they will do it in the United States. But the second aspect of this, and we've talked about this in future programs, it's not just that they're going to steal savings, but also they're going to forgive debt. They're going to forgive the debts of those whose allegiance they want. Now, the last thing that Cyprus should have been doing is forgiving debt of politicians, much less debt which was now the only way to keep these banks solvent. If you forgive the debt, then the banks have nothing for those liabilities. But it's the combination of these things that puts people in a position where they participate rather than reject these kind of immoral economic endeavors. They got the majority of Cypriots to say, all right, we'll take this because their savings wasn't touched. But 60% of the savings now of those who had more than 100,000 euros in their bank accounts, 60% of their money was confiscated. And they also get politicians and others that they want to go along to agree to it by enabling them either to transfer out their savings prior to the confiscation or forgiving any debts that they may have had. It is how the new world order will be played. It's very much akin to what we call the mark of the beast, where you will be manipulated, if you're still around during this time, into acquiescing to their control. And once they have you, they ain't ever going to let go. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Yes, the whole story in Greece, which mostly the world has just ignored, has been a big yawn for most people, and yet it is the trial balloon. It is, if you look at Greece, what you're witnessing is what's going to happen across the world, particularly in the United States and Europe, that the savings of people are going to be confiscated. It won't be the savings of everyone that is confiscated, but the savings of the minority, which represent the majority of savings, will be confiscated. Loans will be forgiven to assure allegiance of other individuals. The currency will become worthless, which means there will be a transfer to a new currency that those in power will establish. And there will be entirely different rules for those who are empowered, both economically and empowered politically, than there will be for everyone else. And most people will simply go along. They, just like Cyprus, they'll just go along. This was the trial balloon in Cyprus, principally to determine whether or not they were correct in assuming that they could impose this debt forgiveness and the savings confiscation and get by with it. And they did. So you will see it played out in a much bigger scale in the next 10 to 15 years throughout Europe and the United States. Sadly, the United States is becoming less and less a haven for free enterprise. Businesses is overtaxed in the United States by a substantial amount. American businesses already paid the highest taxes in the world, and they were just raised another 4% to 39%. And there are more restrictions put on U.S. businesses than businesses anywhere else in the world. And so, as you might expect, the United States manufacturing sector hit, as they say in Reuters, hit a speed bump. And the reason was a slower pace of orders, and most of that was because the U.S. economy, consumer spending was down. Well, why was consumer spending down? Because the government increased taxation. That's the reason consumer spending was down. It was counterproductive. In China, however, demand is strong and manufacturing is growing. And China outproduces the United States now, and the gap between the productive capability of China and the United States is widening. But China, while it's a communist government, the economics of China are purely free enterprise. And so what we're seeing is when people have incentive to work and to produce, they do. When they are disincentivized through taxation or regulation to work, they don't. It's fairly simple. And, of course, in China, you don't have the welfare, Social Security, Medicare, we'll take care of everything. You just rely on your government and you'll just be fine approach. Doesn't exist in China. This next story is from Atlanta. There was hints of it in the news this morning before the program. I think some of that was truncated. We have a little growing pains as we move into the new studio. Apologies for that. But one of the stories that was reported on the news is that in Atlanta, a state investigation has been released that showed rampant and systematic cheating on test scores in the city's public school system. Now, what is interesting here is that the administration and the teachers and the principals of these schools are the ones who were caught cheating. 44 schools and at least 178 teachers were caught cheating. Now, what's happening here? The number of states have imposed proficiency tests that determine whether or not a teacher is able to continue to keep their job, and it's about who gets funds and who gets more. And so what the teachers have been doing is they've been fabricating the test results. And so what has happened here is a combination of two things. One is education in America now is controlled not by people who have any interest in educating your children, but of what they can do to assure what they make. It's the National Education Association is wholly and completely responsible for schools, and they're destroying schools. And because the mentality associated with schools throughout America and throughout much of the world is political correctness, this multicultural, tolerant mindset of no morality. The teachers have no morality anymore. And so they cheat. They do so not for your child's benefit, but for their benefit. And that's the kind of morality we're witnessing across the country.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time for 6,000 years.